everybody who's worked with cows understands you change anything, it's going to have a ripple effect throughout the production, through the animal. So simply a bad quality silage can put animals off feed. And that off feed, it has an impact on the microbiome as well, because then they're not getting the nutrients they need to provide to the cow. And then that has implications for milk production and milk components. When we adjust feeds, whether it be a step-up program into early lactation, whether it be a dry cow program, any of those shifts is altering the metabolites or the feed components that are available for the microbes. So you already mentioned, we feed the microbes, we feed the animal. So what we're providing the animal is exactly the food we're providing the microbes.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Adasale, provider of SmartAmine M, the best-in-class rumen-protected methionine product for dairy producers who want to optimize milk production. Kemin invites you to optimize your herd's performance. Dive in at kemin.com/dairy. Birdus Nutrition, the fatty acid people. Fortiva, creating ingredients for impact to support animal resilience and health. Learn more at FortivaImpact.com. Barnes is your trusted partner for Colon Plus FC, enzymes, yeast products, and macro minerals. To learn more, visit Barnes-NA.com/animal nutrition. Vitagro, the gut health experts, rumen protected, right where it matters. Sponsored by S. Milko Inc., specialists in calf and baby farm animal nutrition, delivering precision formulated milk replacers.
My name is Rick Lundquist. I'm your host today. And it's a privilege to have as our guest today, Dr. Renee Petrie, and Dairy Nutrition Black Belt Podcast. She is from the Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada, and she has lots of different research interests, but we're going to try and focus on just one today. But Renee, if you would, could you give us just a brief bio?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a background in ruminant nutrition, starting off on the feedlot side, and then moved into sort of nutritional microbiology and sort of obsessed with the idea of subacute ruminal acidosis and how nutrition is impacting the health of the rumen and how that impacts the health of the cow, which brought me into sort of the dairy side and really trying to optimize nutritional inputs to optimize milk outputs. Some studies in Europe, I've been working in Canada, specifically with the dairy industry here, looking at all different kinds of ways to improve our efficiency, milk components, and sort of reduce environmental impacts.
Very good. So, you've got a lot of different research interests, but today we're just going to focus on your work with the rumen microbiome. I've always been interested in it. I think it's fascinating. You know, as a nutritionist, it's kind of the holy grail, I guess, if we understand what goes on in the rumen. That's what drives the cow. Sometimes we forget that we're feeding bugs. We're not feeding the cow primarily. So first question then is, how do you go about studying the microbiome?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a really good question. There's a ton of different ways to go about studying it. It's everything from the sampling side through. I know that there's been tons of research done trying to address different questions. But for me, the primary thing is understanding not only who's there, but what they're doing and how they're doing it. So in order to encompass all of those components, we need to understand exactly what's happening in the rumen, have access to the rumen. So we work a lot with animals where we're able to take rumen fluid samples and really look at time lapses, specifically within a day, and then also within a lactation period. So we have a lot of needs when we're looking at the rumen microbiome specifically, and just to put that in context of the animal's production overall.
Very good. It's a complex system, right? From feeding cows, of even changing feed stuffs, ingredients, change silage, you're changing the population in the room, are you not?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
At Barnes, we're more than just another feed additive company. We are driven by science, innovation, and an understanding of the challenges you face in the ever-changing world of animal agriculture. We are your trusted partner for new-to-market natural alternative to choline chloride, Colon Plus FC, as well as enzymes, prebiotics, probiotics, macro minerals. To learn more about our product offering, visit barnes-ne.com/animal nutrition. Together, there's always a better solution.
What kind of effects then does this have on the cow if we have like sudden feed changes and stuff? And what does it do to the rumen microbiome? And I guess to follow up, how long does it take a cow or the rumen to recover from these changes?
Again, great questions. I mean, everybody who's worked with cows understands you change anything, it's going to have a ripple effect throughout the production through the animal. So simply a bad quality silage can put animals off feed. And that off feed, it has an impact on the microbiome as well, because then they're not getting the nutrients they need to provide to the cow. And then that has implications for milk production and milk components. When we adjust feeds, whether it be a step-up program into early lactation, whether it be a dry cow program, any of those shifts is altering the metabolites or the feed components that are available for the microbes. So you already mentioned, we feed the microbes, we feed the animal. So what we're providing the animal is exactly the food we're providing the microbes. The same as we alter a diet for ourselves, it's going to change what effects it has on our body if we go from something very healthy to unhealthy, or if we go from eating meat to only eating vegetables. It alters our microbiome, it alters how our body responds. We have the same responses in animals. But because cows are creatures of habit, any sort of change there has big impacts on their behavior, and that has big impacts on what's available for the microbiome to be efficient or not.
Yeah, very good. Very good.
As far as adaptation, generally we see changes in the microbiome, especially extreme ones, requiring 14 to 21 days for the microbiome to really stabilize again.
You know, I get this question quite a few times. You know, if we're changing, say, a corn silage crop from one to another, and the actual tests look good on the corn silage, but we make this change and milk production goes down or feed intakes go down, and is that just the microbiome is adjusting to that, whatever the new fermentation of that corn silage is? Does that make a big difference in the microbiome?
There's definitely impacts. I mean, we're talking at a very small level what chemical components are involved in one silage or another. But we see a lot, specifically when we're talking forage ingredients, that the animal behavior has a huge impact in that section as well. So the microbiome is very flexible and adaptable. But the changes in animal behavior can really alter what's available to the microbiome. So it ends up being a microbiome issue, but it starts off with something as simple as a change in chop size or a different smell. And I always tell my students, you know, cows are like kids. They will pick through what they like and they'll take only the best stuff. And if there's something that's changed, a kid's not going to eat it. And the cow is also going to balk at it at the beginning.
So is the microbiome of a cow distinct for that cow? Does each one have a distinct array of microbes?
Yes and no. So every animal is individual, the same way humans are all individual with our gut microbiome fingerprint. However, that's more on a who's there basis. When we talk about what they're doing in general, there is a lot of overlap. And so we see some studies across the world that are comparing microbes, whether it's from dairy cows or beef cows, whether it's from sheep or goats, and metabolically what they're able to do is very similar. And their ability to be flexible is based on that ability to adapt to what's in the diet. However, when we're talking about individual animals' responses to things like a step up in a high grain diet, and some animals respond differently, that's often in a response to a slightly different microbiome composition and their ability to adapt based on that.
Is it heritable? I mean, when we're breeding for higher butterfat or higher components of stuff, are we selecting for a different microbiome?
Yeah, absolutely. There is a heritability. We see that a lot on the feed efficiency side, where they've done a lot of work looking at the heritability or the methane production, the heritability of certain microbes. Definitely, when you go back to basic biology, it's always the genotype plus phenotype plus environment equals phenotype. So the animal's exposure in early life to the mother's microbiome, to the environment, that definitely plays a part in it. But there is a certain heritability at a genetic level that we see a preference for certain microbes or dislike for certain microbes based on what their genes are expressing during early ruminant development, so in those first 6 to 7 months of life.
Fortiva is moving beyond feed additives to create foundational ingredients that work with your dairy operation to support resilience and health. With proven technologies like Amulet and Efficient Z, Fortiva helps you address the toughest challenges in dairy production, from gut health to growth performance.
Together, we can make animals more resilient in the face of future challenges. Learn how at FortivaImpact.com.
Anything else you can tell us from your research with the microbiome that we need to know in production agriculture?
In production agriculture, I think a lot of what my work bases around is how we can really do microbiome-informed nutrition. So where can we add in additives or probiotics or byproducts or novel feed ingredients to really adapt the microbiome and choose kind of what we want the metabolic function to be or how we want to stimulate it. So whether we're adding in methane inhibitors to reduce methane outcomes to try and adapt on forage diets, or whether we're adding probiotics for early calf development, a lot of these choices are based on what we understand of how the microbiome is impacting animal production, their milk components, their environmental excretions. And so I think that the future moving forward is not just precision nutrition, but it's microbiome-informed nutrition.
Very good. Very interesting. Speaking of methane, and so we're dabbling with methane inhibitors, enteric methane inhibitors. Does the rumen eventually adapt, or the microbes, do they adapt to those methane inhibitors, do you think, over time? Have we studied them long enough to know that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think some of the new ones, like the Bovaer, we don't have as much long-term data as we potentially need to see those adaptations. And we don't really understand how permanent, so to say, the impacts are on the gut microbiome. So as I said, there's a lot of flexibility, and that's because multiple microbes at the same time are able to perform the same function. So if one is removed based on an addition of an inhibitor, maybe some other microbe can step up. But is it as efficient, or are all of them being suppressed? We don't know all this information for every feed additive, but we do see a lot of adaptation, and maybe it's not completely returning to previous levels, but there is definitely a basis of what the microbiome wants to hold. And we see that in the earlier work, that regardless of what we're adding or changing, there is a certain level of adaptation in an adult animal. We can have greater impacts in early life nutrition and early life microbiome creation if we're entering into the system and changing it early enough. And we don't have the data for what that looks like when those animals are large, not yet.
So one of the areas of interest too, along the line with methane, is I've always thought of methane as a waste. You know, it's a waste of energy. Okay, so now we've reduced methane and we've got that hydrogen out there that we need. There's got to be some sort of productive purpose. Do you have any thoughts on how we can capture that energy?
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a bit of, and I mean, this is early research going on, looking at how we can move those hydrogens that are left over in the rumen into other fermentation product pathways. So there are pathways in the rumen that do use hydrogen, but these hydronotrophs require other variables to improve their efficiency. So there is a potential that it won't just be a different kind of loss, but we're still at the early stages of figuring out how we can manipulate, adapt, and stimulate what we want our outcomes to be.
Very interesting. You obviously have your work cut out for you if you're going to continue to study the rumen microbiome.
Yeah, for
it's
sure.
It's a dynamic system, but it's very, very interesting. And like I said, it's kind of the holy grail for nutrition. If we can understand that, we can really understand what's going on in the cow.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you for your time today. Is there anything else you'd like to add that you'd like us to know about your work?
No, I think we covered just about everything. I think it's a amazing area with a lot of potential for the future. And coming from the nutrition side into microbiology, I think there's a lot of applicability, and just getting the word out about how important the microbiome is to all nutritionists is my goal for the future. So thanks for having me.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure. So signing off for the Dairy Nutrition Black Belt podcast. So pleasure to have you, Renee.
Thank you.
Nice to talk to you. Thank you.